So I forgot to even ask Ashley how we got our hands on it. But one day not too long ago, the girls came home with a used copy of a collection of Gary Larson's Far Side comics. I was flipping through it one day recently, sort of chuckling at the images and pithy descriptions, when I came across one in particular that genuinely cracked me up. And here it is. Richard, will you flip forward one slide? All right, take a look at it. You get it? Those are headhunters, and those are two dudes with huge heads. Right? A little dark, I know. I love the expression on the headhunters' faces as those two giant heads float by. They sort of look like they've won the lottery or some such. Perhaps that says something about my sense of humor. Thank you for forwarding the slide, Richard. Nobody would have paid attention to me the rest of the time if we hadn't. So here's a true story. On the very first Navajo land pilgrimages, we were making the long trek through what feels like a never-ending desert on the drive to Farmington, New Mexico. I made the comment that if somehow the van broke down and we were stuck in the desert and never found, once the food ran out, that I would definitely eat Tony Baker first. Wave, Tony. He's so big after all. He'd go a long way. And he keeps himself in good shape, so he'd be nice and lean. I promise I was kidding. We all got a good chuckle out of it, and it kind of became one of those inside jokes for the rest of the trip. Now moving forward several months, long after returning home, I was eating barbecue with a group from St. Julian's, and I guess the smoked meats sort of reminded some of us there who had been on the pilgrimage of the whole eating Tony thing. Well, Tony was not there, so I decided to text him. I wrote something like, "We're eating barbecue and remembering that we would eat you first if the need ever arose." I then hit send. Well, I guess Tony and Terry were next to each other in my contacts. Because I accidentally sent the text to Mason Terry, not Tony. For those who don't know him, Mason was one of the St. Julian's founding members and one of our elder statesmen who, though has returned to St. David, still worships with us from time to time. Anyway, Mason was not in on the inside joke. And I quickly got a response from him that said something like, "I don't know what to do with this." Again, a true story and my most epic texting fail ever. Which takes me directly to our gospel lesson today from John. And perhaps it actually does tie in some way. For Jesus says to those gathered around him and even to us today, "Those who eat my flesh and drink my blood have eternal life, and I will raise them up on the last day, for my flesh is true food and my blood is true drink." Now, I was at a lecture given once by a theology professor, not Tony Baker, but a theologian at Yale Divinity School. And he was asked the question, how do we know when Jesus is speaking metaphorically, and how do we know when Jesus is speaking literally? And he responded, perhaps not surprisingly, that it begins by using our own common sense. When Jesus says, "Love your neighbor, treat others how you would like to be treated," and the like, Jesus is speaking literally. He means we are to love our neighbor and treat others like we would like to be treated. Pretty straightforward. But when Jesus says, "If your hand causes you to steal, cut it off," or like today, "Eat me and you will live," common sense suggests that he's speaking metaphorically. Jesus does not want us to maim ourselves, nor become like the headhunters in the Far Side comic. And at least to me, this just makes good sense. So what does Jesus mean, metaphorically speaking, when he says several times and several ways, whoever eats me will live because of me? Well, I've shared this quote from Henry Nouwen before, the late Catholic priest and spiritual writer. It's a favorite of mine, and I believe it might shed some helpful light on the metaphor of eating and drinking that Jesus lays before us today. Nouwen writes, "Don't you think that our desire to eat together is an expression of our even greater desire to be food for one another? Don't we sometimes say, that was a very nurturing conversation, that was a refreshing time? I think that our deepest human desire is to give ourselves to each other as a source of physical, emotional, and spiritual growth. Isn't the baby at its mother's breast one of the most moving signs of human love? Isn't tasting the best word to express the experience of intimacy as the beloved ones? Our greatest fulfillment lies in becoming bread for the world." And as I think about this quote in the context of Jesus' teaching today, it is specifically Nouwen's line, "Isn't tasting the best word to express the experience of intimacy," that first stands out to me. Jesus' invitation to feast on his flesh and blood is, in my mind, an invitation to be in a relationship with Jesus that we might describe as intimate. A relationship more akin to lovers than casual acquaintances. A relationship rooted in abiding love, vulnerability, self-revelation, faithfulness, even passion. Jesus is inviting us to bear our naked souls before him, to know his love in our bones, to feel it in our gut, such that we feel a profound love and deep connection to God and Christ, to Jesus, moving in us and empowering us in the very center of ourselves in the most intimate and vulnerable ways humanly possible. Pittman McGeehee, the Jungian analyst, poet, and Episcopal priest, often reminds me that the cells that are the most basic building blocks that make up our guts, our stomachs, are the very same cells that make up our brains. Thus, the food we eat and the microbes that live in our digestive system actually impact our mental health, affect how we feel and the clarity of our thinking. And this is why, when our minds are confused or unsettled or anxious, we feel it in our stomach. In the Daring Way, a psychoeducational program created by Dr. Brené Brown, we teach the concept of shame resiliency. And when we're talking about shame, we draw the outline of a human body on a piece of newsprint and ask participants to take a marker and draw on the body what shame looks like, feels like, how we respond to shame physically, and inevitably someone will draw a big circle in the middle of the body, which represents the stomach, and then inside the stomach, draw butterflies. Further, in ancient times, long before modern science, it was believed, probably because of how our emotions make us feel, that it was the gut, not the mind, that was the seat of our feelings, the place within us from which our emotions derived. Which is all to say that when Jesus invites us to feed on him, he's inviting us to welcome him in to our most intimate and vulnerable places. The very center of ourselves, souls and bodies, the places where we think and feel, the places that most influence our self-understanding and how we view and treat others, the places where we determine how we're going to live, how we're going to love, who we're going to be, and who we hope to become. This is why the act of receiving Holy Communion, the Eucharist, remains such a vital symbol and practice in the church. It begins with the choice to come forward. We have to choose to leave our seats and come forward, which is an act of participation and intention and a sign of our desire to intimately connect with the God of love who we come to know and receive in the person of Jesus. And then we actually receive Jesus' spiritual body and blood and bread and wine, ingesting it into our bodies, into our stomachs, where it becomes a part of all the DNA that lives within us. I read recently that 90% of all the DNA that lives within us at any given time is not our own. Blew me away. It belongs to the many and varied and countless microbes and bacteria and food that exists within us at any given time. Thus, you could say we are living, breathing, walking communities, all contained within our one body, all of which is healthy and required for us to live and move and have our being. No person is an island unto her or himself. Likewise, God's love life, which we are invited and get to receive right here each week, dwells within us, an intimate, life-giving partnership. Thus we come to this table, this altar, to be filled with God, to be entirely filled with God's love, to feast on God's love by faith and with thanksgiving. It's an invitation to know and be known by God in our own flesh and blood, and there's nothing more intimate than that. And then we leave this table each week after receiving Jesus' body and blood, literally in Holy Communion with God. For communion is not something we just do. It is who and how we are to be. Jesus' own spiritual DNA commingled with our own in an intimate partnership, connected in the flesh, a divine community that becomes God's own love life walking around in the world. As we make our way into our homes and offices and classrooms and meetings and grocery stores and streets and neighborhoods and dinner parties and quiet conversations, all the places we learn, serve, and recreate, wherever we are in each moment. And this, my friends, is the hope of the world. That we are what we eat. Jesus' own love life, literally walking around in the flesh, our flesh, providing a loving voice and willing hands and feet, becoming a living, breathing, human incarnation of the divine community that makes up our own lives. For in doing so, like Jesus, we become nothing less than true food and true drink for all those who need a partner, who need to taste their own experience of intimacy, who need to be nurtured themselves by the good spiritual food that we have received and we have become.